Inevitably, every year we have the same question that somebody raises around the time of Thanksgiving, and that is a Jewish family allowed to even celebrate or highlight Thanksgiving? And I think it's a very good opportunity not only to talk about this, but to really have a discussion about B'chukoseim lo seilechu in general, and how to understand what the parameters of this Isser are, and what perhaps they are not. So Thanksgiving is just one piece of it, but it really is a far-reaching discussion way beyond the issue of Thanksgiving per se. So it all begins with a pasuk in Parshas Acharei Mos, where the pasuk says, "K'maisei eretz Mitzrayim asher yeshavtem ba," to act in the ways in which the Egyptians acted, "lo sa'asu," do not try to emulate or mimic their behavior. "U'chemaisei eretz Kanaan asher ani mevi eschem shama lo sa'asun." So the Torah says, do not act like the people who live in Mitzrayim. Do not try to emulate the behavior of the people who live in Eretz Yisrael where you're about to go. Now, if you'll notice, this pasuk actually makes specific mention of those who lived in Mitzrayim and those who lived in Canaan. Is that to be taken literally, or is the Torah just giving two relatable examples? The Jewish people had just come from Mitzrayim and they're headed to Canaan. So it just gave two relatable examples, but obviously it's to be extended far beyond those two cases. How do we understand what the prohibition actually is in this pasuk in Chumash? So that's a three-way discussion among the Rishonim. The Yireim is of the opinion that this is something that is only limited to the Zion Amamin, the nations that live in Eretz Canaan and Eretz Yisrael, as well as those who live in Mitzrayim. But outside of that, there is nothing that should be extended to any other nation. So if you live in America, and you have the Americans are acting in a certain way, the Sefer Yireim says there would be no prohibition to behave like the Americans because they are not the Egyptians and they are not those who live in the land of Israel, and therefore there would be no problem. Why is that? Rashi on Chumash explains the reason why is because there's an assumption that the Egyptians and those who lived in Canaan were so perverted, were so especially depraved, they were worse than anybody else, and therefore the Torah is emphasizing, make sure not to be like them. To be like others is not so bad. But to be like them is horrible, and therefore you need to stay away from their kind of behavior. The Sefer Achinuch disagrees, and he says, no, the Torah didn't mean to limit it only to these two categories of nations, but rather the Torah meant to say that you should not behave like any Ovdei Avodah Zarah. When you have a religion, and they are serving a different God than we are serving, they believe in some other entity than we believe in, then obviously you shouldn't behave in the way they behave. And that applies across the board to any other religion outside of Judaism, and therefore, Sefer Achinuch says that this is a general statement that really means to include the behaviors of all Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And finally, the Rambam is of the opinion that no, this doesn't only apply to Ovdei Avodah Zarah, it goes to all Umos HaOlam, it goes to all nations of the world. So if you live in America and you have a neighbor who is not religious at all, who doesn't follow any religion, who's just a freestanding human being, such a personality would be a person that the Torah would say you also are not allowed to behave like him or her. How does the Shulchan Aruch paskin? Shulchan Aruch paskin is like the opinion of the Rambam that this applies to all Umos HaOlam. It applies to all Gentiles, regardless of their affiliation, regardless of their religious status. We assume that B'chukoseim lo seilechu is something that applies across the board. In explaining the intent behind this prohibition, the Rambam says as follows. Says the Rambam, "Ein holchem b'chukos ha'ovdei kochavim, we're not allowed to be similar in their behaviors. We're not allowed to wear the same clothing. We can't get the same haircuts." Says the Rambam, he quotes a bunch of psukim that teach us that. And the Rambam explains why. The point is that we want the Jewish people to be separate. We want the Jewish people to be distinct. And the only way to do that is to ensure that b'chukoseim lo seilechu. Says the Rambam, it doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter who you're emulating. We want there to be a clear demarcation between you and the rest of the world. And therefore, the Rambam says, if you're going to wear other clothing, if you're going to behave differently, then that will be the opportunity for you to show that you feel that you are distinct. You feel that you are different. Va'avdil aschem min ha'amim, which is really what the Sefer Achinuch writes when he talks about the mitzvah of Bris Milah. Sefer Achinuch says, while it's true that we have a mitzvah to make sure that everything we do is going to be different from Umos HaOlam, can there be a greater distinction than a physical separation between a Jew and a non-Jew? Doesn't that show that we are completely in a different side of issues than they are when we show that in our bodies itself, we are willing to make a distinction? Anyway, that is what it's all about. But based on that understanding that the Rambam shares with us, we then know why the Rambam extends this to all Umos HaOlam. It has nothing to do with an Ovdei Avodah Zarah. It has nothing to do with which religion you practice or where you live. The Rambam is saying that this is an overreaching prohibition, and the reason for that is because we want that the Jewish people, wherever they may find themselves, should always be muvdalim. They should always be separated. They should always be v'avdil eschem min ha'amim. The challenge that's presented in all of this is that this is stated in the Torah in very general terms. The Torah just says, b'chukoseyem lo seylechu. So what does that mean? So if a non-Jew drives a car, I'm not allowed to drive a car. If a non-Jew flies on a plane, so I'm not allowed to do that. If a non-Jew wears a suit or a pair of pants or a shirt or a skirt, so you would say that we're not allowed to do that. So how do you understand what the parameters are? What is b'chukoseyem lo seylechu in practical terms? The Torah doesn't really tell us. And for that, we have to look at two very important Gemaras that seem to give us a different takeaway message from each one, even though they're describing the same thing, but we're going to have to see exactly what it means and what the parameters are. So we begin with the Gemara Maseches Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Aleph. The Gemara there tells us that there was a practice, there was a custom, that when a melech died, when a king was deceased, so they would take all of the items that belonged to him, his bed and his chariot and his clothing and everything he owned, and they would burn it. They would reduce it to ashes. Why? What's that all about? So the Shach writes that the reason why they did it is because the Gemara says in Maseches Sanhedrin that out of respect to a melech, you're not allowed to have anyone use the items that he used to use. After his demise, we want to show the melech is in a league of his own, and this is not going to be handed over to anybody else. Therefore, we burn it. We burn it to show that nobody else is ever going to have the ability to use it. So the Minchas Chinuch has, I don't understand. The Gemara does say that there's one person who's allowed to use it. Who is that? The next king. The next king is allowed to use it because he's on the same level as the first one. So why wouldn't he be allowed to use all of these garments and all the chariots and everything that the first king used? Second one should be allowed to be used as well. So the Minchas Chinuch says, yes, it's true, but out of kavod to the melech, this is what they used to do. They would burn everything, even though technically they could hand it off to the second one, to the next king who's the replacement. They used to burn it to show Mishum Kavod Shel HaMelech. Now you can ask, isn't that Bal Tashchis? Very good question. So you have to really know what the parameters are of Bal Tashchis actually are, and where it applies and where it doesn't apply. Generally, we assume that Bal Tashchis, when it's being done for a specific purpose, is not considered to be Bal Tashchis. Like a very recent question that's come up in the last 10, 15 years is, I don't know exactly what it's called in business, but when you have an influx of too much produce, so what's going to happen when you're going to put it all out on the market? What? The price goes down. So if it goes down too much, what's that called? I don't know. I'm not in the business. I have no idea what it's called. But it's what?
Bad business.
Bad business, correct. But this is a problem. So what do we do? If we have in Eretz Yisrael, we have many orchards that are growing a certain product. And now if you're going to put it all out onto the market, the prices are going to go down. It's going to kill the whole market. So what do we do? So what every country does is they take it out onto a boat, dump it into the ocean, or they dispose of it somewhere. How can you dispose of it? Isn't it Bal Tashchis? How are you allowed to take perfectly good produce and destroy it? The answer is they're not destroying it just to be destructive. They're destroying it in order to be productive. They're doing it in order that the markets should fluctuate and the markets should be healthy and everything should be in check. And the only way to do that is by destroying these items. So yes, you're watching somebody destroy something that would have been able to be used somewhere else, but that would not be defined as Bal Tashchis. And that's a general question that we find in many different places, which is really not the focus of this discussion here. So the Gemara says that this is what used to be done. After a king died, they used to burn all the items. They would reduce it all to ashes, they would incinerate it all, and they would not hand it off to anyone else. It was to show that this king is in a league of his own, and nobody else is going to replace it. Ask the Gemara, how are we allowed to burn it? This is a practice that we saw done in the Umas HaOlam. This is something that the general community used to do. When their leader died, they disposed of all of his items. So how are the Jews allowed to do it when their king dies? Very good question. Isn't that b'chukoseyem lo seylechu? Says the Gemara, no. The answer is that d'kuli yama sreif alav chukahi. They did not dispose of the items from the first king because that was the tradition, because that was the custom, because there's any ritual involved. They only did it because mishum chashivusa. They did it out of respect, out of admiration to the king, to show how much awe they are in from his passing. So they do some kind of very demonstrative act to show that we want everyone to understand what a catastrophic loss we just went through. They didn't do it for any ritual purposes. They did it because they wanted to demonstrate how much this person actually meant to their community. The takeaway of that Gemara seems to be that anything that is done for a particular purpose, anything that is done even though the Gentiles do it, but if we're doing it for the same purpose that they do it, and they're not doing it for any ritual purpose, but they're doing it because there's a reason behind it, then that would seem not to be any problem at all, as long as there's no theology involved, as long as there's no religion involved. So now let's look at another Gemara, Maseches Sanhedrin, that presents a very different conclusion than the one we just came to from this Gemara, Maseches Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara there is talking about the details of capital punishment. And the Gemara says, unfortunately, every so often, we have to put someone to death. So the Gemara tells us that we have four categories of Misas Bezdin. We have Skila, Sreifa, Hereg, Vechenek, four different iterations of how we will give someone the death penalty. But the problem is, we don't know exactly how to administer each of those punishments. We don't know the details of how it's done. So the Gemara tells us all the gory details, all the gruesome details about how exactly they went ahead and administered each one of the Dalet Misas Bezdin. So the Gemara gets into a discussion there. When you have someone who's liable to be punished with hereg, somebody who's going to be, whose head is going to be severed. So the Gemara says, how exactly do we do that? Big machlokas in the Gemara, in the Mishnah actually, the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda, what do we do? So Rabbi Yehuda says, we do something that seems gruesome, we're not going to describe it, there's no reason to do that here. So the Gemara says back, I don't understand. Why would you describe it in such a way? Ein lecha misa menuvelas misa? Why would you describe such a gruesome way to kill someone? It's nauseating. Why would the Beis Din do that? So Rabbi Yehuda said, you're right. I would prefer not to do it that way. Aval ma esa, what should we do? Hare amra Torah v'chukoseyem lo seylechu. If we're going to administer capital punishment the same way others do, then that's v'chukoseyem lo seylechu. So what should I do? So we have to come up with this newfangled way to kill someone. This way we won't be doing like the Umas HaOlam. That's what the Gemara says. And the Rabbanan said, what do you mean? But the Torah said you should give him hereg. The Torah said you should kill him like this. This has nothing to do with the Umas HaOlam. This is not a carryover from them. This is the Torah told us what to do. So we're not following them, we're following the Torah. What are you worried about? That's the discussion there. Then the Gemara says, well, when we talk about being Sarei Fala Melech, when we talk about burning the clothing of the king after he passes on, after he dies, so how are we allowed to do that, says the Gemara? Because the Torah itself says that's what you do when a king dies. So what's the takeaway from that Gemara? Very different than the takeaway from the first Gemara we had. Takeaway from this Gemara is that it depends whether something is stated explicitly in the Torah, then we're allowed to do it. If the Torah does not tell us to do it, then we're not allowed to do so. That's what the bottom line of the Gemara seems to be. And Tosas there points out that this is a contradiction between the two sugyas. One sugya says the bottom line is, if the Umas HaOlam do it, it doesn't matter whether it's written in the Torah or not, but if they're doing it for a ritual purpose, then we're not allowed to copy them. If they're doing it for any other reason, which is sensible reason, then we are allowed to do it. But here the Gemara says that the determining factor is whether or not it is written in the pages of Chumash or in Tanakh or perhaps not. So which one is it? That's what the Balei HaTosas are trying to figure out, and they give a slightly complicated answer to figure out how to come to a conclusion here. So they say, Tosas says, if they do something for the sake of Avodah Zarah, for theological reasons, for religious purposes, as a ritual, then that's prohibited. We're not allowed to do it at all, even if there's a pasuk in Chumash that says the same thing. We're not allowed to do it because it looks like we're copying them and we have to separate ourselves. That's with regard to that. However, anything that they do which has no theological reason for doing it, but they're doing it because they have a purpose or they're doing it just for no reason at all, then Tosas says we would be allowed to do it as long as it's written in the pages of Chumash. That's what he writes. Now, if we would accept this opinion of Tosas, we would have to cut out many, many aspects of our lives. Correct? We would have to cut out many aspects of our lives because the Torah does not say you can drive a car. And the Torah does not say all the other things that all the Umas HaOlam do. So Tosas says here, when you have something that's theological, it's off limits, doesn't matter what the Torah says. When you have something that's not theological, something that's not religious, then you can only do it if the Torah says so. So what do we do with all the modern things that we have today? That would be a problem. The mazel is that we do not accept the answer of Tosas. We accept what the Beis Yosef writes in the name of the Maharik. The Maharik Kolon answers as follows, and he says that there are two classifications of this prohibition of b'chukoseyem lo seylechu. And he says that it really only applies in two very specific circumstances. Number one, he says, when they have something she'ein taimo nigle, when there's a custom out there in the world, and we have no idea why they're doing it, so then we're not allowed to copy it. Why? Because we have to assume that 1,000 years ago there was a very good reason why they used to do so, and it had something to do with religion. We forgot it along the way, But therefore, we are not allowed to copy that because that is something that probably stemmed from Avodah Zarah. That's number one. Number two, he says, if they have a practice, which is pritzus v'derech hatznius v'anava, something which is a profane kind of behavior, something which is an inappropriate kind of custom, then he says, obviously, we're not allowed to do that either. But outside of that, everything else would be fine. That's what he writes. So the Rama in Yerodeo writes the following. This is the accepted opinion in the Rama, which makes life much easier for us. The only time that something is prohibited because of B'chukoseyem is if they're doing it mishum pritzus, if they're doing it to break a barrier of appropriateness. Or number two, he says, v'davar shenagu leminug v'lechok ve'ein tam v'davar. Or if they have some kind of custom and we don't know what the reason is, so we have to assume that it probably dates back many, many generations, and there was something that had to be connected to a religious issue back then, and we forgot about it, and therefore we would not be allowed to. However, says the Rama, aval davar shenagu l'toelas, the why you guys ask every single year before the graduation, are they allowed to wear the caps and gowns? You've heard this question? Every year. And the answer is, look in the Rama. The Rama says, davar shenagu l'toelas. Let's say they do something for a particular purpose. For example, the example that he gives, the Rama says, kigon shedarkon shekol mishehu rofei mumche. He gives a practical example, and he says, a doctor, yesh lo malbush miyuchad shenikar bo shehu rofei uman. He wears a lab coat. He wears special clothing so that when you walk in the room, you know exactly who the professional is and who the patient is. We know who to help, and we know who's supposed to be helping. So it's very clearly identifiable when you walk into a room, who's the doctor, who's the nurse, depending on what color clothing they're wearing. So says the Rama, if you're going to have a doctor wear a white coat, you'll say, well, what a strange thing, why doesn't he wear the same clothing everybody else? No, there's a very good reason, because when we're going for surgery, and we need to know exactly who's supposed to do what, we don't want to get confused. So we have the patient wearing these kinds of clothing, we have the doctors wearing those kinds of clothing, and that's okay. V'cheinos mishim kavado tam acher, says the Rama, any time that they do something for a reason, that would be okay. There's nothing wrong. It makes sense. And therefore, that would be something that we are allowed to do as well. Now, there's a further discussion in the Achronim. Do we assume that there should be new applications of Chukas Akum, or we should leave it at whatever Chazal said is a problem is going to remain a problem, but any new examples are not going to be updated. So the Hagos Maimoni famously writes that B'chukoseyem lo seilecho is frozen in time. And whatever the Gemara said is a problem remains a problem, and whatever today seems to be a problem would not be a problem at all. And this is rejected by all the Achronim, the Bach, and everyone else says, how can that be the case? If the whole impetus for the halacha was that we should be muvdalim, min ha'amim, that we should be separated from everybody else, then how are we going to be separated in 2022 when life has changed and the whole environment and the whole world has changed? How can you use the examples from Chazal from 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago to make any implication for how we're going to live life for today? So that's with regard to that. So Rav Moshe was asked the following question in the year 1980, Tufshin Mem Aleph. So he said, there was somebody who reached out to him, Reb Tzvi Yehuda Teichman. I don't know who he is, but the tshuva is written to him, and he said, I have a lot of students who like to go to baseball games. So would you say that attending a baseball game is a prohibition of B'chukoseyem Lo Seilechu? Or for that matter, he says, what about going to Tiatron? What is a Tiatron? A movie theater. Am I allowed to go watch a movie? Or would you say, no, that's B'chukoseyem Lo Seilechu. That's what everybody else does, so I'm not allowed to do that. Would that be an updated version of whatever the Gemara said 2,000 years ago to be applicable in our generation? Rav Moshe writes, Be'elu shenikru tiatron she'osa sham inyan eschok. You go and you watch a movie. V'chein et stadion, or he said, if you have a stadium, she'heim ha'makomo she'mesachkim sport, and you have people who are playing sports there. Lo shaychi b'hu inyan v'chukoseyem Lo Seilechu. Says Rav Moshe, in my opinion, this has nothing to do with B'chukoseyem Lo Seilechu. Duhu davka kishu chok la'akum. He says the only time B'chukoseyem applies is when you're doing something for no good reason, or you're doing something that has a religious ritual to it. And he says a sports game has a very good reason. People want to have fun. People want to enjoy themselves. They want to relax. So he says you're going to a movie, you're going to a sports game. That's not B'chukoseyem Lo Seilechu. You're not doing that because, oh, you know, the Umos HaOlam have this very interesting, strange custom that they go and they all come together in a stadium and everyone just sits there. How strange. It's not what happens, says Rav Moshe. Everyone comes because they want to watch, because they want to have a good time. And therefore he says, that would not be B'chukoseyem Lo Seilechu, and it has no connection at all to serving Avodah Zarah. Therefore he says it would be no problem. Avol, Kisheikatam lema'osim, kahadid stadion. He said when they go to a stadium and they're there for a purpose, there would be no problem. However, he says, there's a different problem that you're not recognizing, and that is, afshu davar aser mitzad iser leitzanus. He said, if you're going to go watch an inappropriate movie, or you're going to go see something that's going to lead you to have an improper attitude in life as a result of what you watched, then he says, that's a problem. You're going to go to a ball game and sit in the section together with all the people who are speaking the way they speak, who are going to be drinking beer and talking inappropriately and touching inappropriately. Then he says, that's a separate issue, nothing to do with b'chukoseyem lo seilechu. That's something we need to think about outside of b'chukoseyem lo seilechu. But he said that really would not come back to this prohibition. So that's what he writes. Then he has a very interesting comment in the end where he says, Kim Dumani, it seems to me that the Komrim, which means a Komer is a priest. He says the priests, de emunas hanotzrim, the priests are the ones who are the leaders of the Christian religion. Shehi ata emunas rov umas ha'olam, and he says if you look around the world, it's the predominant religion today. I'm not sure that that's really correct. Maybe the Muslims are. Nami lo nichaluhu in yani tiatron v'itstadion. The priests don't believe that this is a way to serve their God. They don't go to ball games because they feel that's a way of coming closer to their religion. Obviously not. And then he says, La'anshei amunas hamuchmadim, the imams, who are the heads of the Muslim religion, they too don't believe that this is a way to come closer to God, and therefore going to a ball game has nothing to do with b'chukoseyem lo seilechu at all. However, he emphasizes that a person has to be careful about arayos, and a person has to be careful with all the other things that may be going on there, but those are separate issues that you have to take into account that have no connection at all to b'chukoseyem lo seilechu. Very often you'll see that the custom here in America, at least, is, and all over the world, I guess, is that when you want to honor somebody who has deceased, somebody who's passed away, what do? They go to the cemetery and they lay a wreath. So this is a big discussion. Is this something that would be b'chukoseyem lo seilechu? To put flowers by a grave, is that b'chukoseyem or not? So this is an interesting discussion that Rabbi Avadia has in Uchuva. And Rabbi Avadia says the truth is, if you look carefully enough throughout Chazal, you will find that the Gemara talks about that the Jewish people used to do this as well. They used to bring hadassim to the grave. Now, why they bring hadassim? Probably because that was cheaper than bringing a big wreath. That was much more expensive. But Rabbi Avadia points out that that would not be something that is considered to be b'chukoseyem lo seilechu. It's out of respect to the person who passed away. This is what was always done. This is what the Gemara describes. So he says he doesn't see anything wrong with that. Then he discusses what happens if you have a situation where people want to wear black clothing during the Shiva. So obviously, when you go to a secular funeral, that's what they all do. Everybody comes in black. So is that considered b'chukoseyem lo seilechu? Says Rav Avadia, no. Why would that be b'chukoseyem? The reason why they're doing it is that they should be in a somber mood. The way that they should express to everybody else how gloomy the situation is. So we all know that when it's darker, it makes you feel less happy, less upbeat. And therefore he says, that's not something that's done because of religious purposes. You're doing that rather because you want to bring out a certain emotion. You want to bring out a certain mood in the room. And that would not be a prohibition of b'chukoseyem lo seilechu. There is a very, very rich discussion. I'm sure many of us have been to those shuls where they have a rabbi or the chazan wears all kind of different robes and wears a big hat. Right? You've seen such a thing? Right? Embroiderers, they have that. So that was a big... No, they don't have a separate... Embroiderers, they have a separate coat? I don't remember. Spanish-Portuguese. In the Jewish center, they have it also, right? Different shuls have where they wear it. So this is a big discussion in the postgame whether or not there's anything wrong. The truth is that if you look in other religions, they have clergy robes, they have clergy apparel, they have clerical clothing that the priest or the minister or the monk will wear. And that is why there were many, many achronim who felt that it's totally inappropriate in a shul to have somebody do that. Obviously, the shuls who do it have what to rely on. It must be a custom that dates back very, very far back in Jewish history. But the truth is that many, the overwhelming majority of the poskim who talk about it say that they find that to be b'chukoseyem lo seilechu. That is directly connected to ritual practice. That is directly connected to the way that a minister in other religions will dress when they come to shul, to their prayer services. And therefore, that is something that they say should be stayed away from. So then, Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he talks about Thanksgiving. So he spells Thanksgiving as follows. Tes, yud, yud, nun, kuf, samach, gimel, yud, vav, vav, yud, nun, gimel. So it took me a while to figure out what he meant. But he writes as follows. Emaser mitzad b'chukoseyem lo seilechu li'ishtateif b'sudas yom ha'oda she'osim ba'artzos habris. He says, we live in America, and we know that Thanksgiving is a very big deal. So is there anything wrong with me participating in a Thanksgiving dinner that we're going to have together. There are some people, he says, who take it very seriously, and they make a suda, just like we would on a Yom Tov. I have to say, it bothers me every year that in our shul, there's always somebody who gets up, the same person every year on Thanksgiving, who says good Yom Tov. Every year. This is exactly where Moshe says. To celebrate Thanksgiving is one thing, but he says to make it into a Yom Tov is something else. He says, Mikivan, Shebesifrei Dasam Lo Huskar Yom Zelechag. Says, as far as I know, there is no religious significance to Thanksgiving. It did not start as something that was because of any connection to religion. It's not a pagan holiday. Vegam lo sheyischayvu besuda. It doesn't say in the Bible, it doesn't say anywhere that on Thanksgiving we need to have a suda and it has to have this, it has to have that. We know that the practice in America has become that they eat turkey and everyone has a good time. Vekiven shu yom zecher la'anshei ha'medina. All it is basically a day where the Americans have a day off from work, and they all enjoy each other's company, and they all make a meal. It's a day where they celebrate that they came from other countries, and now everybody's living here with religious freedoms. There's nothing wrong with eating turkey, and there's nothing wrong with sitting around with your family and having a meal. What could be bad, says Rav Moshe. And he says, Avol. To make it almost as if it's mandatory in your family that everybody, whatever you're doing, has to show up. And you have to drop everything else that you have planned because we're having a Thanksgiving dinner, says Rav Moshe. That, he says, smacks a little bit of something that's not appropriate. If you want to just use it as an excuse, look, it's always nice to have family get-togethers. And it's always good to find reasons why we should come together and be grateful for having each other in our lives. Rav Moshe says he sees nothing wrong with that. But if you're going to make it into something that's like a chag, you're going to make a religion out of it. So then he says that would be something that probably would not be appropriate at all. And that's what he discusses here. My father also writes that Rav Soloveitchik was asked the same thing. And he also felt that there was nothing wrong with it at all. Rav Soloveitchik also said he had nothing wrong with eating turkey, even though turkey in itself is a whole discussion, whether or not there's a Masorah on turkey. It's a newer bird. And birds don't always have a Masorah if they're newer. So that's a question for another time. I see it's already time for Maariv, but... Oh, yeah, did he?
Doctor for a family get together.
Uh-huh.